It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideals Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll ask you, what was the best gift you gave or received this holiday season?
But first, there have been calls lately to change the way Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice is selected.
Right now, it's all about seniority. Whoever's been there the longest gets the gig. State lawmakers have taken the first step toward amending the state's constitution to change that, but it'll take a while. Christian Schneider made the case for that change in a recent Milwaukee Journal Sentinel column. He joins us now. Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how big a part of the support for this change comes from the Republican majority in the legislature not liking the current Chief Justice, who we get under the seniority system, Justice Shirley Abramson?
Probably a great deal. I don't think anybody would argue that Shirley's kind of irascibility isn't a main reason behind this. But, you know, as I said in my column, despite all of that, I still think there are probably good reasons to do this, and there are reasons to change it in the Constitution.
Let's get into the reasons long term, forgetting who the Chief Justice is now or would be right away under the new system. What is the long term case to make that change and the change would be to have the justices elect the Chief Justice instead of the seniority appointment?
Yeah, well, this has been in the Constitution for 124 years, and I don't really think it's been tested all that much, but it's gotten to the point now where, you've seen all the stories where, the justices just aren't getting along. There are fewer cases being decided, and there's just a lot of acrimony on the court. You've seen from a couple years ago the famous case where there was actually a physical altercation over when the decision to the Act 10 decision was going to be released. So you've seen a lot of that and a lot of news articles about that. And a lot of the signs point to, sometimes you'll have a Chief Justice who's there and, in this case is a liberal, and you have four conservative members of the court that make up the majority. And just because the Chief Justice happens to be there the longest, she gets to decide a lot of the scheduling and when things come out and things like that, which causes a lot of problems on the court. So instead of having a situation like we have in the legislature where, senators and representatives, they kind of get together and they decide who they want to be their leader, somebody who has to go out and forge relationships and kind of do the work of getting support behind them. Instead, it just seems strange to take just the person that happens to have been there the longest and lead the court, especially when you kind of have a split court like we do now.
But wouldn't this just be one more decision that highlights the partisan divide? In addition to the partisan cases they see, they're going to split ranks, the conservative versus liberals, on electing the Chief Justice.
I just think it's important for people on the court to kind of decide the way they want the court to be run. Like I said, just like they do in the legislature, they get to decide, who they want to pick to schedule the bills that come up and all of that. It's just not the case, whether you're in a union or any other kind of group, that you just take the person who's been there the longest and make them the leader. It's usually the person that you can get along with the best. And, you should have a say in how you want your workplace to be run, and that's, the conservatives on the court right now don't have that option. They kind of have to do what Shirley Abramson tells them to do strictly because she's, been there the longest.
And the Republican-controlled legislature passed the first hurdle on this change, I think, back in October. What's the next step going forward?
Well, it's both houses of the legislature have passed it, as you said, this session. So it's got to be passed again next session, and then it goes to the public for a full vote. And if they do it quickly, they would have to pass it early in 2015 for it to be on the spring ballot, which would be in April of 2015, which is actually kind of an interesting date to have the election. Because that's also when we'll be electing a Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. And so that'll probably be near the end, thankfully, of an acrimonious Supreme Court election as well. So I think people's eyes will have been on the court for a while at that point.
Is this something you think the public would be worked up about? I mean, just hearing about it, it seems just sort of a procedural thing that it might be hard to get the electorate excited about one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have justices out there making the case of why it either works or doesn't work, which is, you know, it's a little strange. Generally, you don't hear from justices, you know, during a during an election, the justices that aren't actually up for election. So you'll actually have some people involved in politics, you know, and we kind of feel a little bit weird when judges actually get involved in politics, but that would be the case here. So they'll be out making the case, and, you know, the legislature made a change a few years ago where they changed the way that the governor could veto the budget bill and other types of bills, and that was something people probably didn't really know a whole lot about when it went to them for a vote, but I think people figured it out and made the change. So, you know, hopefully by the time this comes around, people will have heard enough about it.
We've got a caller. Ann in Stevens Point is with us. Ann, hi.
Hello. Well, I think that this is just more of the same. It's another example of trying to grab power on the part of the right. They already own the court because of campaigns where huge amounts of money were poured in by interest groups that are conservative. And this is just another opportunity for them to continue to gain power.
Gotcha, Anne. Not too much time left. I want to get a response from Christian. So this is just another, she says, effort to got to lock that down, I guess, and cement control of the Supreme Court while there's a conservative majority.
Yeah, well, I mean, the conservative majority controls most everything. What we're talking about here is the Chief Justice, who is really kind of an administrative position. She doesn't get to decide what cases are decided or how they're decided. It's more of just kind of a getting along thing on the court, and you know, whether it's kind of gumming up the works right now. So I just want the court to be able to work better. It's not really going to change a whole lot in what they decide.
And one possible hurdle remains between the vote last fall and that referendum that would happen. That's the second vote would be after next fall's elections.
Right.
There's a chance, I suppose, that Democrats could get control over one of the houses. Would that effectively derail this effort to amend the Constitution, do you think?
I think it probably would. I don't think it's likely that's going to happen, but yeah, if either the Senate or the Assembly went Democrat, they might, they might not be. I think this is, it actually passed on a fairly partisan vote, with most Democrats voting against it. So that would signal that they're probably not on board.
All right, well, that's one we'll be watching in 2014 for sure. Christian, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Christian Schneider, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
And coming up, we'd like to hear from you to tell us about the best present that you gave or have received this holiday season, whatever it might be. A pair of socks, perhaps? There's, you know,
some fine socks.
They're fine socks. So give us a call now. Tell us what your best present that you gave to somebody, why you gave it or received, and talk about that. That's 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us, talk@WPR.org.
It can be an exciting whiz-bang toy or some really meaningful thing from or to a kid. You name it. 800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Coming up, we'll be talking about the top news stories of 2013 with a political science expert.
But first, many people around the world marked Christmas yesterday with gift-giving. Mm-hmm. And now we want to know, what did you get or give for Christmas?
Lots of things to talk about there. Did you get just what you were hoping for, or did you get a dud for a gift? We've got a couple of nominations for that in already. Maybe Santa left you some coal. Give us a call and let us know what happened to you this holiday season. 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. That's at talk@WPR.org, or post your comments at the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go straight to our callers at 800-642-1234. We have Kathy in Rhinelander on the line. Kathy, hi.
Hi. I got my son a drum set, and we staged a scavenger hunt throughout the house with really boring stuff like socks and underwear and, you know, a necktie, and then it culminated in with the drum set in the guest bedroom, and he was really shocked.
How did you sneak a drum set in? They're not small, and they're not quiet.
My husband took a day off on his last day of school, and we spent a good part of the day transporting the set and setting it up, and then I barricaded the room with boxes of from the Christmas decorations and stuff, so he wouldn't accidentally open the door and see it. And
so a lot of parents, Kathy, are thinking you gave your kid a drum set. That's setting up an interesting year for you now with a lot of noise. What do you think about the sound?
It's not as bad as I thought it would be, actually, and I'm happy he's taking his music seriously.
So. Excellent. Well, it's a great present. Kathy, thank you so much for sharing your story.
That's a terrific one. Let's go to Arlene now, and Arlene joins us from Two Rivers. Hi, Arlene.
Hey, good evening. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
And what I gave this year to my nephew was a wood truck that I bought in Nicaragua while I was there for 2 months, just came back. And on value-wise, it's not a lot, but he's 3 years old, and he has this way of playing with toys, especially cars and trucks and little things like that. And when he was visiting me this last summer, he left all these little tiny trucks for my son, who are all grown up. And every time I saw it, I just could see him walking around my house playing with this tiny little car all around the walls and things. And I just have this love for him, and he has this sincerity of how he plays. It's such a child thing to do, but he's so in love with it. He loved it. He thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
And those wood trucks are hard to break, too. He'll have it for a long time.
It's very, very heavy. I literally have to bring it into the country. They were almost half his size, so I think he'll enjoy it for a long time, I hope.
That's great. Arlene, thanks so much for that.
If you were calling just a moment ago and encountered full lines and a busy signal, a couple lines have opened up. You can call and tell us about the best gift you received or gave this holiday season, maybe yesterday on Christmas. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dave in Augusta called to say the best gift I got for Christmas this year was to have my family together. A great gift. Definitely, Dave. Thanks.
And we've got a note here. The worst present was a stiletto-shaped scotch tape dispenser. I'm like, wow, what's so bad about that?
We're not going to name names. She's sitting here in the studio. Back to the phones at 800-642-1234. We've got Will on the line in Kenosha. Hi, Will.
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can. Now, what was your best gift given or received?
My best gift, I have to say, I gave was my girlfriend. I gave her an engagement ring.
Oh, wow. Well, what did she say?
Yes.
Good. Was she surprised, or did she kind of see it coming?
She kind of saw it coming. She just didn't know when.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, might as well make it Christmas.
And did you have it? Was it wrapped? Did it just look like another Christmas present, or did you do a little production?
No, I just, nothing special. Just got on one knee and asked her. Didn't bother wrapping it.
All right.
Okay, now here's a challenge, though, Will. What are you going to do next year?
Yeah, how do you tell that?
I haven't thought that far ahead.
It's got to be something even better, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
Will, thanks a lot for sharing your story.
Let's go to Pam now, and Pam is with us from Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Pam.
Hi. My best gift this year made me feel really good. My mother-in-law, who is 74, she's in end of life in hospice, and she's being taken care of by her husband and myself mostly, but he's 75, so his cooking isn't the greatest. So I asked her what she wanted her for dinner. So I made her everything she asked for dinner, and she got to eat a very bad dessert because she's a diabetic. And a bunch of snacky foods, and I'm getting choked up just talking about it.
Well, that sounds like a really great gift and a very thoughtful one at that, and it speaks well of you and the season. Pam, thanks so much for the call.
And we'll go now to Nick in Green Bay. Nick, hi.
Hi. We were flooding yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and last week we went flooding, and my daughter got this orange sled that we bought from Goodwill, so that was really fast compared to the one that we had. So I went and bought two of them, and yesterday we went flooding, and I threw the extra one in the truck here. Some three-year-old kid, like, his inner tube, like, went flat, so I gave him the sled, and he just loved it, and the mother came up to me, and she's like, thank you so much, and I don't know who he is or anything, but it was just kind of cool to see a three-year-old having such a good time with it.
Ha! A random act of kindness, Nick. I love it. What a great present. Thanks for calling and sharing that story.
We have a note from a Dr. Potter in Green Bay who sent us an email. The best Christmas present I ever got came 2 days early this year. I was given my second healthy son on the 23rd of December this year. That's a terrific note to hear from, too.
Congratulations to you and your family, Doc. That's great to hear. We've got Nancy in Pewaukee on the line now. Nancy, hi.
Hi there.
What's your story of a gift this year?
Well, when my 18-year-old granddaughter, Justine, asked what I might like for Christmas, I said, I just want a note that tells me how much you love me. And so she did that. She wrote a beautiful essay. And besides the note, she made a song mix on a CD and gave it to me. And she says that explains it all.
Have you had a chance to listen to the CD yet?
No, that's several generations ago, and I'm just a little worried, but I... going to put it in the CD and
there you go.
Listen to it while I'm doing housework.
And remember, it's the thought that counts, and her heart's in the right place.
Oh, God, yes, my thought. Okay.
Nancy, thanks so much for the call.
A couple lines have opened up now. If you want to share your best present that you got or gave this holiday season, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. We got an email from John. He writes, I gave my wife a $700 crossbow so we could spend quality time together practicing hunting in the fall. She wants to spend more time together, and this is my idea how to do just that. And we'll get some venison, too. Crossbow hunts became legal, that's true, for all in a week, but it will truly take effect in autumn. Well, John, happy hunting with you and your wife, and... your matched set of crossbows now.
800-642-1234 is the number that you can call if you would like to join in. If you received a terrific present this year that you'd like to tell the world about, let us know. Or if you gave somebody something that you thought a long time about and it means a lot to you, let us know about that too. Here's that number again, 800-642-1234.
We'll go to Chloe in Ripon now. Chloe, hi. Hi, what present did you want to tell us about?
Well, I got a new phone from my parents, so that was pretty exciting.
Is this your first phone?
Yes.
Okay, and you're going to use it responsibly, right?
Absolutely.
Are you using it right now?
Not now, but I did get scolded because apparently I'm not allowed to text in the car to my sister and she's sitting right next to me.
All right. Well, I think using your phone to call into public radio in the future will be fine, as long as you're not driving, of course. Thank you so much for sharing that, Chloe. Appreciate it.
All right. Let's go to Wausau right now, and we've got a call from Joan. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
And what did...
Happy holidays.
Oh, thank you. Did you give or receive something?
Well, I received the best gift. A friend of mine built me a little free library to put in my front yard on the fence. And I don't know if everyone knows what they are.
They're those they look like those little houses, and they've got books in them.
Right. And so they started in Wisconsin. I think a man built one in memory of his mother, who was a great reader. And now they have spread all over the world. And I like the gift because it will allow me to share a lot of good books with the neighbors and everyone who goes by the house. So it's a very, very nice gift. Once he finishes with the copper on the roof and the shake shingles, we'll be in business.
And Joan, do you know what books you're going to start it off with?
Well, yes. Well, I don't know if I want to name all the books, but I have a shelf full of books that are all ready to go out.
Okay.
And hope someone will. And I think what the sign on these libraries is always take a book, leave a book.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just keeps filling itself with books from the neighborhood.
A Christmas spirit all year long. Joan, thanks so much for the call.
All right. Time for one more call. Todd in Woodruff. Todd, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What was your present?
I went to a gentleman's house to do some work, and he had train memorabilia all over that I commented on. And he said my father was the president of a certain railroad. And I had a bunch of antiques, and one of them was an antique train car of that railroad. So I went back to his house and gave that to him.
No
and
kidding.
I said, I felt like you should have that.
Oh, that's cool.
Great.
That's really nice.
Todd, thanks a lot for sharing it. Thanks to all of you for your calls. It's been a lot of fun. You can keep it going on the Central Time Facebook page. We're Central Time on WPR. Or tweet us. We're at Central Time WPR on Twitter. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're recapping the biggest news stories of 2013 right now with David Redzlock. He is a professor of political science and director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.
And we'll want to hear from you as we talk about the top stories in national news. You can join at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What was the most important story or the one that had the most lasting impact? You can email also talk@WPR.org. David Redlosk is with us. David, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, there's a lot of ways we can define most important story. I wanted to throw it to you, first of all. Is there something that you think we're going to look back in future years and look back at 2013 and say, that was the big one in the United States? That's the one that made a difference in the long run.
This has been quite a year, and there have been an awful lot of stories. At one level, the Edward Snowden story, the issue of the NSA documents and the documents he's been releasing for a good part of the year really is really important. It's really important because it's brought the issue of privacy to the forefront. It's brought the issue of what our government's doing to a lot of people's eyes that hadn't thought much about it. So that's certainly one, but you know, to say it's the most important, I think we have, you know, the rollout of Obamacare and how badly it was handled, although I think in the end that may be a blip down the road. The election of Pope Francis, while it's certainly not just a national story, you know, has huge implications in this country, given the number of Catholics and the way he's approached the papacy. I, you know, it's just been an amazing year.
We'll dig deeper into some of those stories, but you used a great word there, blip. I think sometimes in the media, that thing that's happening today looks so huge, and we're all in a tizzy about it, and sometimes a week later or a month later, or maybe it takes a year, we've all pretty much forgotten it, and it won't end up in the history books. What do you think it is that makes something break past the 24-hour news cycle and be that big story?
Well, you know, I think part of it is it has, you know, wide-ranging impacts on people, not just on government, but on people. And while the Obamacare story, the rollout failures certainly do, those will undoubtedly be fixed over time. And I think 5 years from now, we'll look back and say, well, yeah, it got kind of screwed up, but, you know, things got resolved over time. On the other hand, something like the Snowden case, I think the repercussions for how the government operates, both within the country, but also with our allies and enemies, is going to be a very long-term story.
One commonality between those stories we keep seeing in polling: declining trust in government or lower opinions of Congress or the parties or the president. Is that a big story that maybe gets reinforced by things like the Edward Snowden leaks or the difficult rollout for something like the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, it does. I think people, you know, a year ago, I don't think we thought trust in the government or ratings, for example, for Congress could get as low or any lower than they already were, and it's been a continual decline throughout 2013. I think I saw something somewhere where people have a more positive impression of cockroaches than they do of Congress. The president, of course, has his own ratings have suffered tremendously in the Obamacare failure. But, you know, there's this general issue, I think, that people are really wondering, you know, what is going on with government these days? Can it really do the things we need it to do?
Another big issue that was on our minds through the year was were things related to the budget, the fiscal cliff, all these deadlines that they barely met and then finally didn't meet with the government shutdown. And that's when I think that's going to keep going into 2014, regardless of a deal they recently reached.
Yeah, the deal is only partial. They've still got to figure out the debt ceiling once again very soon. At one point, I thought the shutdown was the big story, right? And then it was immediately followed by, you know, more Snowden leaks and Obamacare. But the shutdown is important. It's been a part of that reason people are just kind of fed up with it, the sense that we send politicians to Washington, and rather than try to get things done, they draw these lines in the sand and they, you know, take these positions and they absolutely refuse to compromise. The system is based on compromise, and you know that shutdown, that 16 days, that had very serious impacts on real people, kind of indicates how far we've come from that at this point.
The idea of compromise sometimes gets treated as a dirty word in certain places, like people who are watching Congress, even people within Congress. Is that a growing trend, or has that element always been there, do you think?
Well, it ebbs and flows really over time. That our government is really designed for it to be difficult to get things done sometimes. But since the rise of the Tea Party in 2010, the difference is palpable. You've got folks in Washington who truly have gone there to muck it up, to say, I don't want things to happen. I want to shut it down. And that is a very different thing than we've had through most of the history of this country.
You know, speaking of just things to watch for in 2014, I don't want to lose sight of the NSA leaks, the Edward Snowden leaks. That is definitely a piece of unfinished business right now. We're seeing panels recommending at least some changes in how the NSA surveils us, or if the NSA surveils us. Where do you see this issue going as we head into a new year?
It's really, really difficult. I mean, firstly, we're in a very different world in terms of electronic surveillance and the ease of which government can track what we're doing. You know, everywhere we go with our cell phones, somebody can know where we are if they want to. And all the old rules don't necessarily apply all that well in an environment where supercomputers can crunch through, you know, trillions of bits of data to find that needle in the haystack. So I think that's what Congress is going to be grappling with as they try to decide if there are new rules. And we have an administration that I think many liberals are incredibly disappointed in Obama because he's taken, you know, what seems to be a pretty reactionary position about government surveillance and about the role of the NSA. And he seems to be resisting even the recommendations that have been put out there.
There are privacy advocates who are really upset about this. You mentioned some on the left and certainly some on the right, very upset about this. Do you have a sense that the public is really worried about this, or is this a case where we kind of know we don't have that much privacy and this is not something that a lot of us are that excited about?
I think there's been a real sea change on that in the last few years. In fact, I do think people are all but throwing up their hands saying we just have a different world. Young people, particularly millennials, we talk about them, really have a completely different view of this in the sense of privacy. That they're, you know, you just can go on Facebook and Twitter and other places, and the sense of privacy is so different these days that I think that's where we're going. I think people will just recognize that it isn't there.
We're recapping the biggest news stories of 2013 from around the nation. We have David Redlosk with us. He's professor of political science, director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.
And we'd like to hear your vote for the biggest news story of 2013. Out of all the stories we've been talking about, what has stuck with you so far? That NSA story we've been talking about, Obamacare, or something else, maybe sequestration. There's lots and lots to talk about. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Make your nomination for the biggest news story of 2013. 800-642-1234, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're recapping the biggest news stories of 2013 right now with David Redlosk. He is a professor of political science and the director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.
And we're polling you. What was the most important national news story this year, do you think? We've talked about a few, the Edward Snowden NSA leaks, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, the congressional budget difficulties. Was one of those the most important, do you think, or something else? Call in with your nominations at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. David, a couple other things that really captured our attention during the year. The George Zimmerman trial over the death of Trayvon Martin. It wasn't a big congressional act, obviously, but it certainly had everybody talking and thinking about race and guns and a whole lot of other stuff.
It did, and in particular thinking about guns. I mean, race, of course, is a piece of this, but in some respects, coming as it did with the after the Newtown shootings, Connecticut, other shootings that have been somewhat high profile in the last few years, and now the idea of somebody who's just carrying a gun to protect the community in some way. It led into that gun conversation that seems to have just completely petered out, which is kind of fascinating. I think in the aftermath of Newtown and the Trayvon Martin case, I think we all thought there would be a lot more going on than just some brief conversation that dissipated.
And that's not an uncommon storyline. After a major shooting of one sort or another, there's a brief flurry of talk that something might change in gun laws, and rarely, if ever, does much change.
Yeah, rarely. And of course, part of this is simply the power of the National Rifle Association as a lobbying group in terms of its ability to get its members moving, to get things, to kind of have congressmen quaking in their boots. But it's also a matter of a Congress that can't really take action on anything that's controversial at this point. There's just, between the House being controlled by the Republicans, the Senate by the Democrats, the Tea Party, the unwillingness to compromise, I suppose we shouldn't have been surprised that this one petered out as well.
And one, this has been a long, busy year, the Boston Marathon bombing.
I know. It's funny, as I was kind of thinking about it for today, what was going on. There are all these stories, many of which have kind of faded. And in some sense, we tend to think of at the end of the year wrap-up like this. It's the most recent stories that immediately come to mind as the big ones. But, the Boston Marathon shooting, or bombings rather, of course, had everybody glued to the story, both in terms of the question of whether it was terrorism, in terms of how could this happen, and then of course the outcome of it. But that now feels so long ago.
Yeah.
Not to minimize it at all, but this has just been an incredible year in the sense of stories going on. I don't want to forget about same-sex marriage.
Right. News breaking as we speak,
right,
almost.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think going into this year anybody thought we'd have what has been a real sea change. I mean, public opinion has been shifting over the last few years, but it's now majority support for same-sex marriage. We're seeing, of course, the Supreme Court's ruling over the summer setting the groundwork, frankly, even though I don't know that they intended to, for things like the Utah case. And I think that that's one of the things that a few years down the road, we're going to be looking back and saying that was the tipping point.
I was going to, that's exactly the phrase I was going to use, was, and a lot of other people have used, is tipping point. Why? Why did this critical mass suddenly get achieved on that issue?
You know, part of it is public opinion. I mean, part of it is that attitudes have shifted. I think you go back a few years when Massachusetts legalized same-sex marriage, and the world actually did not collapse. And while some people might disagree, Massachusetts did not collapse. I mean, you know, there was this sense that the very small victories over time, and, you know, things aren't that different after the fact. You get courts in Iowa and other states weighing in, and, you know, at some point you just build up this sense that there is an inevitability to it. The Supreme Court ruling, the irony about the Supreme Court ruling is it wasn't that liberal a ruling. The ruling striking down DOMA struck down DOMA simply because that's always been a state issue, marriage. And the court said the federal government has no right to overturn what the states do on this. Well, enough states are moving in that direction that I just think it's a non-issue down the road.
We've spent most of our time with things situated here in the United States. I want to look at foreign policy and foreign relations. The civil war in Syria is one of the biggest stories in the world going on, and it was a weird change here. It looked like the United States was on the verge of getting very directly involved in that, and then we didn't. That seems like one of the weirder twists, I think, in the year.
Yeah, I think it was. I think that the Syria situation, you know, we certainly all expected in August and September that we'd be fighting yet another battle, or at least we'd be in there bombing, mm-hmm. even if we weren't on the ground. And of course, that's not what happened. Instead, Russia, of all places, intervened. Russia essentially convinced Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, to give up his chemical weapons, and that process is now underway. I don't think the United States government was particularly happy about it. You know, you'd think you'd be happy about the you know, getting rid of the chemical weapons, but I don't think they're happy about the role Russia suddenly took center stage here. But the other thing that hobbled Obama with these red lines he kept drawing and then kept allowing to be crossed was public opinion again. I mean, U.S. public opinion was so set against any intervention in Syria, I think it would have been extremely difficult without very direct provocation on the United States for Obama to actually do what he claimed he would do.
Is there intervention fatigue, do you think, after Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah. There is, absolutely. I think we just... You know, we don't want to police the world right now. The public, you know, doesn't see that we gained anything out of either of those two wars. And, of course, Afghanistan is still going on. We're still getting reports of service members being killed there. And I think the public is just fed up with it.
It's, a story that's going to keep going, whether we're directly involved or not.
Absolutely,
a massive
yeah.
refugee crisis, a war zone.
Right.
Even if we're not directly involved, it's something that will still be going on.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, so the focus on the chemical weapons, all right, maybe that's been dealt with, maybe, but the war itself is still going on. And it's unclear where it's going. Another problem we face is that the rebels don't necessarily look like good guys to us either.
Also in the Middle East, a possible deal in the works, and this was kind of a surprise, with Iran on nuclear weapons or nuclear development there.
Yeah, it seems like Iran may be reaching the point that, you know, they need to come back into the world in some sense, and maybe there's some recognition of it. They could be playing a really important role in the Middle East just by the virtue of their location and their size. But the sanctions that continue, the position they've had in the world that's continued, I think really hobbles them. So it could well be that internally in Iran, with the new leadership there, they're saying, you know, we've got to reengage somehow. And they can't reengage unless something's done about, you know, the nuclear issue.
And that was enabled by an election result, a less conservative, by Iranian standards, president elected.
Right, and that means, you know, this is still, it's still not a pure democracy. So this election result, while it mattered, of course, it still matters what the clerics, you know, what the Ayatollahs behind it say. And apparently there is a move to open up, at least to some degree. And again, a lot of this could be simply financial. It's been costing them massively, and it's hurt their country massively.
Another story, very recent one, the passing of Nelson Mandela. He was old, he'd been in ill health for a while, but it really captured the attention of the world and got a lot of people thinking about his legacy and maybe in some cases how they could apply that in their own country around the world.
Yeah, it did. Mandela was, was one of those figures that you knew was there, but in some sense we didn't think a lot about him. Once he was no longer president of South Africa. But, of course, his story is an incredible story, a story of, more than a quarter century in prison, coming out to lead a new government, and then not focusing on retribution, but focusing on reconciliation, something that seems a pretty short supply these days. So in some sense, Mandela's passing just really focused on the effect that one man can have. Have they solved the problems in South Africa? Of course not. There's still plenty of problems, poverty, other issues. But what they didn't do was have the kind of blowback on the white government once it fell. And that was due to Mandela.
Assessing the year as a whole, and a lot of people writing up the year in review stories have been painting this as a bad year back home now for President Obama. Do you think that's a fair assessment? It's not been a great year for him?
It's not been a great year for him, and a lot of it's been brought on by him, by himself. Either in kinds of statements he's made, the red line in Syria, the statements about Obamacare, or the failures, quite frankly, of managing projects like the Obamacare. The president isn't outwriting code on the website, but it's fascinating that nobody has really paid a price in his administration for what's happened. And I think that's the crux of the problem he faces. People are not seeing him as an effective leader right now.
I want to spend a minute or so on 2014. What are the things you're going to be watching for? What are the big stories? Obviously, some will surprise us, but what are you looking for in 2014?
In many ways, it's just at the moment, in the early part of the year, it's a continuation, right? It's a continuation of Pope Francis, for example. I think that story is huge. I think the recent public opinion poll showing, just the level of admiration for the Pope among, Catholics, but among non-Catholics. And I think his role in the world could be very, very important as he tries to lead the church in what appears to be a somewhat different direction. But, it's a continuation of things like the NSA questions. It's a continuation of the Obamacare rollout. Will Obamacare's failures at the beginning be a blip in 5 years? 2014 is going to decide that.
David, thanks a lot for joining us and spending this time with us.
You bet. Happy to do it. And have a happy new year.
You too. That's David Redlosk. He's professor of political science and director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.